Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Longbox Heroes, episode 356. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
Oh, you woke me up, Todd.
Oh, my goodness. Old man sleepy time? Is that what it is?
Oh, boy. Too much work today.
Sometimes you make even more for yourself, but that's neither here nor there.
It's like once a month, things get much more stressful and more tiresome for me. And then I remember that we have to do it again the following week.
Oh, well, that'll be a shorter one. Don't you worry.
I hope so. We'll find out.
But
save it for the air.
Right. I don't know about you. I just find these totally relaxing, and then I go sleep.
Oh, must be the life. If only I knew someone who enjoyed editing audio podcasts.
Oh, remember when we had a guy who did that for us?
Oh, twice? Man. I think he's dead now.
Remember when we got paid for podcasts? Yeah, anyway.
Wait a minute. We still do get paid, just, you know, not the exorbitant amount that we used to.
And in accolades from our fans we get paid in.
Allocades. We call them allocades here.
Okay.
So, Todd, what do we got on the show today?
News out of San Diego, from creators leaving books to getting on books, all different things. I can't even begin to tell you how much news there is.
There's a lot. Well, we postulated last week that it was kind of slim pickings for news, that it was going to be coming out. I will say this seems to be one of the more direct comic news packed San Diego comic book conventions in a long time.
Yes, and it even seemed to trickle out after San Diego, too. So
right.
So lots of good stuff. We also have the cons that are coming up that can beat even San Diego, I think, some of the smaller ones. Free books and digital sales. What we read last week, which was Batman 27, Archie 22, and Kansas City, KFC Across the Universe,
oh,
number
boy.
Three, the San Diego freebie, whether you got it digitally or have it. A copy in your hot little hands, either way is good. Also, what we're looking forward to this week, and Todd and Joe have issues, and this week was Uncanny X-Men 201.
Right. And still no TV talk, no movie talk. Next week, though, I promise we'll have I'll have a review of the Emoji Movie.
Oh.
I give you an advance review if you'd like.
Oh, okay. Are you just gonna say Patrick Stewart?
Nope. I'm gonna have a milkshake and fall asleep.
Oh boy!
Like I did during Despicable Me 3.
I just remembered I could do a review of Dunkirk.
Oh, you could?
Yeah, I saw Dunkirk. Over
I know you told me you were looking forward to seeing it. I heard mixed things.
Oh, it's interesting. I liked it.
Just interesting?
No, it's really good. I thought it was really good. It's a lot. Heavier than I thought it was going to be for a war movie, because it's actually told in three times that I'll meet up at some point. So it's very heady for a war flick, but you have to figure it out as you're going. But by the end, it's just soul crushing at times, but also uplifting, which is amazing. And Nolan's just completely fantastic. So there you go. There's my review of Dunkirk. But if you're going to go, take your earplugs if you go to an IMAX, because it is a loud movie, boy.
I don't go to IMAX.
War is loud, Joe.
Apparently so.
So there you go.
Again, nothing else. Dunkirk review out of the way.
Right.
Let's get into some of the news here, and really it's going to be all over the place. We're just going to kind of pick and choose things off this long list of things. The first thing that I'm going to pick is Sonic the Hedgehog. So
yes,
just a few, now this is actually a story that goes back quite a ways, in that Archie Comics had been the longtime publisher of Sonic the Hedgehog comics all the way back to like the early 90s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then within the last 6 to 8 months, there was no new Sonic books. They were regularly doing Sonic crossovers with properties like Mega Man and other Capcom properties and things like that. And then about a couple days before San Diego, the official Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter, Facebook, social media said that there's going to be an important update coming soon regarding the comics. And then at San Diego, they announced that IDW was going to be picking up the license to begin publishing new Sonic the Hedgehog comic books next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring it up because it was, you know, an independent publisher in Archie, and it was one of their longest-running third-party comics that was being published. And now it's at a different publisher, which is very strange. And I think there was stuff that happened maybe 5-6 years ago where there might have been lawsuits regarding characters that were maybe created in different mediums that were used in the comic books that Archie lost lawsuits over.
Yes.
So I think that's maybe why Archie decided to start backing away from the property a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. But it's the end of an era. Archie's not doing Sonic the Hedgehog comic books anymore. IDW is.
That's right. And I've said this many times on the show. I'm totally surprised how often I hear people walk in the comic shop asking for Sonic the Hedgehog comics. And I'm trying to remember the comic. There was like an offer comic from somewhere. I don't know if it was in another comic or it was from a video game that's worth like a ton of money. Like Sonic the Hedgehog comics, you know, if you own them, look into them because some of them go for a pretty penny.
Mostly because it was probably kids getting the books.
Mm-hmm.
And kids don't typically take care of their comic books.
They get all dirt and cookies on them.
Mud and cookie fingers, right? Just like on Ninja Turtle Omnibuy.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. I'm still upset over that.
And then those kids grow up, and there's something that happened to the Archie Sonic the Hedgehog comic book that happens in a game or some sort of other supplemental material, and they're like, hey, I remember that in a comic. I want that comic because XYZ is in that. Oh, that comic's worth hundreds of dollars because there's so few of them in decent condition.
Right, right. So
I don't have many Archie comics.
You don't have many Sonics?
Sonic comics, yes.
I don't have any, so.
So where to next? Pick a story, Todd. Any story.
I'm going to go with Alan Moore retiring from comics after a Legion of Extraordinary Gentlemen mini.
Hmm. So being published here by Top Shelf, it's going to be Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. With the fourth volume of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, a six-issue miniseries that is allegedly going to start publishing next summer. And obviously Todd points this out because Alan Moore said that after this he'll be retiring from comics.
Which is a big thing to me. Like, he's one of the names that literally changed comics in my lifetime. And him, and I think they even said Kevin O'Neill might be retiring too in it. But either way, I like the fact that Alan still has one friend in comics who hasn't alienated him. Or vice versa. Right. So he can retire, with one friend in comics. But I was a big fan of the first two League of Extraordinary Gentlemen minis. They were great. The Black Dossier was not too weird, too out there. It was like actually like a dossier instead of an actual story. And then the little prestige format books that they did, they were decades for in A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where I couldn't get behind them. But I'm interested in a final League book and to see Alan Moore go off into the sunset. I think he's still going to write novels because he just had a novel few months back, a year ago or something like that, not too long ago. So he's not going to retire, but makes me think he might start cashing them Watchmen checks be now because he's got no more comic income coming in.
Okay. You believe Alan Moore when he says this?
Yeah, I do.
Hmm.
I do. When he said he's no longer doing superhero comics, he never did superhero comics again. When he said that he wasn't going to do, like, when he says he's not going to talk to somebody, I honestly believe after League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he's going to walk away from comics.
Okay.
What's he been doing in comics for the last 5 years anyway?
Doesn't he write us a bunch of stuff for Avatar that no one reads?
Oh, that is true. He does the... I can't think of what the name of the books are.
Right.
But he does a couple of those. He did a Crossed Mini. But I honestly think he'll walk away. He won't do any more comics.
Okay.
You want to put money on it, big guy?
No, I don't. But the other loophole on this is the same 6-issue miniseries that the first issue is solicited to be coming out a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think that 6-issue miniseries is going to take to come out?
I don't know. I want to say it'll be on close to on time. Kevin O'Neill's pretty good on deadlines. I don't remember him being really late. So if he has, I don't know, because it's
I don't think
away.
Kevin O'Neill's the problem here, Todd.
Right. I'm throwing that out as the first thing, but I have a feeling Alan has this story kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
And those other books that he did recently, like you talk about, that nobody really knows, they all came out on time.
Hmm.
So I think
did they? How would anyone know if they come out on time if nobody gets them?
Well, you know what? You ask at the shop later today.
All right. I'll ask how well those Avatar Alan Moore books sell. Our local retailer will say, Alan Moore writes books for Avatar, and then we'll all have a giant laugh.
Nope, he gets them all. You're talking to the biggest Alan Moore mark on the face of the planet.
Oh, that's right.
So he gets every little thing that he does, so he'll know exactly how often that book comes out.
So I'll find that out later today, and I'll report back next week.
That's right. That's your homework assignment. Like, you don't have enough.
Right. So out with the old and in with the new. A writer who we've mentioned on the show here recently when we did a preview review book of the Image title Redneck, that would be Donnie Cates. And obviously, you know, everybody's looking for the next new big thing, and Marvel has just recently signed him to an exclusive, and he is going to be taking over both the Thanos book and the Doctor Strange book as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Doctor Strange I'd fallen off of because Jason Aaron left the book. And as long as the first Donnie Cates issue isn't the first issue of a miniseries event comic that I want no part of, I'll definitely give it a try. And this is just a continuation of the Thanos book that Lemire is already doing. So that'll be sticking around because I enjoyed his work on Redneck.
Right. And I'm hoping when it comes to his first book on Doctor Strange, not only is it a big event tie-in I don't care about, I hope it's not told out of order, too. So,
oh, boy.
Right? Issues, numbers coming out before other numbers. But on Thanos, he has some big gauntlets to fill.
Sure.
So I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed what I saw in his Redneck. So I don't know. Like, I'm a Thanos guy. I get Thanos, whatever writer's trying it. So I don't know. But I'm looking forward to it. And like you said, when Jason Aaron left Doctor Strange, that was I was the same way. So I would give Doctor Strange a try with this writer also. So I'm looking forward to it. And you don't see Jason Aaron leave books too often. So
right. Well, you mentioned that, and that'll lead us into one of the other stories, of course, which is some new Star Wars stuff that's happening. Is that Kieran Gillen, who had previously been writing the Darth Vader book, had left after that wrapped up. He is still writing the Dr. Aphra book, and now starting this fall, he is going to be taking over the main Star Wars book. Jason Aaron is leaving that after his, some 40-issue run, maybe more?
Right. Annuals in there and stuff like that.
Right.
But that's big, because I wonder what they have cooking for him, because you would have to pry me off that book like with a crowbar, because I don't know how good Star Wars sells in the shop. That's another question we could ask. But I can imagine like the trades and stuff like that. I can only imagine the royalties on the main Star Wars book with the main characters.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know, like, if he's like, oh, I finally do want to write Southern Bastards again, or they're giving me some other giant book that I've always wanted to write, or what. But just to say, like, all right, I'm done with Star Wars. I'm like, I don't know. I like money, Joe. So I would, I don't know what.
I think we may have discussed this before.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many years ago, when he was writing other stuff at Marvel, most particularly, he was writing Wolverine and a Punisher Max book.
Yep.
And the Punisher Max book just kept getting later and later and later. And there was one of the issues of the Wolverine book where he had, like, kind of a little foreword in the beginning, mm-hmm. which essentially was summed up as, while I write these two books, one of these books makes Marvel a lot more money. So that's the one they want to come out more often. So if the book that doesn't make as much money as the book that does make money, that's what is going to, you know, come out first. That's the number one priority, even at Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So while he's probably making a lot of money with the Star Wars book, I know that he's still staying on Thor, and there is a Thor movie coming out, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's something tangentially related to that that he might be involved with. Just right. Speculating.
Or, like, he's getting something else that he wants. We'll see.
Possibly. Now, there's another Star Wars book that's being added to the mix, because they've been kind of, I don't want to say getting a little too big for their britches. But, you know, you've always had your main Star Wars book, your Darth Vader book, and then there would always be like a rotating miniseries or two. But now mm-hmm. you've got three ongoing series with the Darth Vader, the Dr. Aphra, the Star Wars book, and there's a Poe Dameron book. There's the Journey to the Last Jedi Captain Phasma book, and then there's the official movie adaptations, and now we're adding another book. Starting next year, Todd.
Yes, the Thrawn book with Grand Admiral Thrawn, Luke Ross art, and I forget exactly who is writing it off the top of my head.
Jody Hauser.
But this is one of those books that I'm going to get regardless, because I'm a huge Grand Admiral Thrawn fan from the Zahn novels. I don't know. Did you ever read the Star Wars novels? Any of them?
These are the only ones that I read.
Okay, so you know of Thrawn.
I am very much aware of him.
Okay, so now I don't know where these books are going to take place 100% because Thrawn's in the cartoon somehow, and I need to know, like, I'm not sure how all the cartoons work, like what ones go where and what, like, what ones were first, but I kind of start want to watching wherever Thrawn is, and I'm hoping that these books take place, like, later because we have the Star Wars movies now. We have some stories taking place past Jedi in you know, books and comics and stuff like that. So I want that Thrawn, because I'm not a big fan of any stories told prequel era. But if they are prequel era Thrawn stories, I still will read them, because Thrawn is one of the greatest characters in the history of Star Wars. That, especially that wasn't even in the movies. But,
right. Now, whether or not this is going to be a miniseries or whether it's going to be an ongoing, I think the sweet spot for this is to fall in between, Empire and Return, which is kind of where, no, he wasn't in Shadows of the Empire, right?
Which one was Shadows of the Empire, the comic?
No, well, the book that took place in between Empire and Return of the Jedi.
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
Because he was off.
Right, post-Jedi is what we're talking.
Right.
So,
but
go ahead.
In around the prequels, because when the books were, it was like, oh, well, where was Thrawn during all this? And Palpatine had him, you know, in the Outer Rims waiting for something that was coming, so he wasn't around for years. But he didn't just become a Grand Admiral overnight, so are we going to see the early adventures? Like, there's a lot of wiggle room where you can write Thrawn, so I don't know.
Right, we're going to go back to when he was just a little boy and he was sad.
Yes.
Maybe we can even tie it back to, like, he was one of the pod racers in episode one. You really
Pod racing. Now that's pod racing.
Right, wizard. Is that a thing that he would say? Wizard.
Yes.
And yippee.
I believe all these are phrases, Star Wars phrases.
Right. These are the, like, just as memorable quotes as, like, don't tell me the odds, do or do not.
Yes.
Luke, I am your father.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Your midichlorian count is off the charts.
Yes.
Sand is coarse. It gets everywhere. The classic, mm-hmm. the classic ones that everyone has on their shirts when you go around, you know?
That's right. I'll have the blue milk.
Right. So, still over at Marvel, it was officially announced that with the Legacy books, the team that's going to be on the Captain America book is going to be Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, who have done one or two or three good runs in comic books in the last 10 years.
Did you say Mark Waid and Chris Samnee are going to be on Captain America?
I did.
I'm going to buy it. Let's move on to the next story.
Well, no, Todd. Let's reel that back a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, from the panel where this was announced, Mark Waid says, quote, Steve is tired of being a couch surfer, and this is going to follow Steve traveling the country, trying to reconnect with people. And then, quote, says that their marching orders were to bring back the Steve Rogers that we know and love. Did the Steve Rogers we know and love go somewhere, Todd?
I think he became a Nazi.
Is there a different Steve Rogers around? Is this kind of tip in the hand to what happens at the end of Secret Empire that still has another 4 issues in the can?
And who knows, they might even add a few. I don't know. I guess maybe. I really don't care, like I said, because you told me more than I needed to know and looked into. But yeah, they might have tipped the Secret Empire hand, but...
Right, and that's the thing for me is, it's Mark Waid, it's Chris Samnee. I don't think there's a character you could tell me that they were doing a book of that I wouldn't want to read, right?
Right.
But because of everything that's been going on with Captain America lately, I'm worried on how heavy it's going to tie into whatever the fallout of Secret Empire is going to be. And then again, of course, how long are they going to be on the book? Or is this even going to be like an in-continuity book? Or is this just going to be like, oh, we have this story, which I don't know if I would rather that or not.
I don't know.
I have a lot of questions for a book that I would normally buy sight unseen.
Now, wait a minute. So this means you have – now, all this stuff that you're rattling around your brain, does that still mean you have reservations about buying this book? Or is this all stuff you're thinking about going, and I'm buying the book?
Right. These are just the things that pop into my head, but it doesn't matter. It's added to the list. It's getting purchased.
Right. The thing that I really hope that it's more – like I listened to you give me the description of that – of said story, and I hope it's more Green Lantern, Green Arrow, hard-traveling heroes and less Superman grounded.
Right.
That's all I'm saying, because I've seen this story done before, and I've seen it done phenomenally, and I've seen it done, oh, well, Superman grounded. So that's all I'm worried about.
Well, Superman Grounded was good at the end when another writer took it over.
That's right. What was my favorite part? When it ended.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So speaking of another book that I would purchase sight unseen is the DC book that was announced from Jeff Lemire with art by Ivan Hayes, and that is The Terrifics, which is apparently a mashup of Blackhawk stuff and Outsider stuff, and Freedom Fighter stuff, and a little bit of JSA sprinkled in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at the art that they released for that from Ivan Hayes and all the characters that are on there, and then tell me Jeff Lemire is writing it, and I'm like, I'm all about this.
Right. Now, I have a couple of things rattling around my brain about this title.
Go ahead.
And just before we get there, I'm buying it, so... is Jeff Lemire. One, Jeff Lemire back at DC? That's interesting.
Well,
Because he left, and then he was talking about, like, oh, remember, he's leaving Thanos because of whatever happened. Remember, like, there were plans with that, and then it's like, oh, well, I changed my mind, I'm wrapping things up.
Oh, yeah, there
and
was supposed to be, like, a big crossover event with Thanos.
Right, and then that fell through somehow. I don't even know all the ins and outs of that. But then he was like, it seemed like he was kind of backing away from the big two and was going to go do some like more of his creator owned stuff, which he has a ton of books. And I was like, oh, okay. And now he's back at DC. So I don't know. I find that intriguing. Maybe you don't.
Well, okay. I don't find the fact that he's back at DC intriguing. I can certainly see how the last 12 months of DC Comics could entice anyone to come back.
True.
But obviously you say that he has a bunch of creator-owned stuff, and he does with, you know, stuff like Black Hammer, stuff like Descender. He's doing like 6 books over at Valiant. But I could certainly see that with the last 12 months of what's going on at DC, you've got people like Geoff Johns, of course, coming back doing stuff. You've got people like Tom King, who seem to be being groomed as kind of, you know, remember when Marvel had the architects of whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
But Tom King is obviously being positioned as someone of like, what character do you want to write something about? Go do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they probably came to Geoff Lemire and they said, or years ago, Geoff Lemire had some crazy pitch for a team that looked either exactly like this or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the editorial regime was at that time, they said no, because this character is tied up here and that character is tied up there and this person's doing this and so on and so forth. And then with the last 12 months, they might have saw Geoff Lemire dropping a couple Marvel books quietly, not like quietly letting his exclusivity there run out. Give him a call and say, hey, remember that thing you pitched to us 5-6 years ago? You want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
Well, what I like in there too is where you were talking about, like, well, we're going doing this and doing that, when he was there pitching Terrifics, and it was like, hey, this book sounds too bright and happy for New 52.
Right.
Could you have somebody murdered horribly and disfigured and their arms chopped off? And,
right, we need at least one arm being ripped off in the first 20 pages.
That's right. We need the Geoff Johns special right there. But I find that interesting. And when you're talking about Tom King, I call him Tom, watch your back, Geoff Johns, I'm coming for you, King.
Because, oh, my goodness.
Because, yeah, tired. But so that because Tom King is going to have Geoff Johns' job someday. Tom King is going to have Geoff Johns' job someday.
You think so?
Yeah, oh, yes. Geoff Johns is a scared Joe right now. But the other thing, too, is that they were calling it the DC's answer to Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
And when I hear things like that, it makes me even more positive that we're getting a Fantastic Four Marvel book. Because these things just don't happen in a vacuum. So, I swear to God. It's like these two companies know what the other one's doing. And they're like, oh, they're buying an FF book? Let's sow the seeds first and say that this is our answer to Fantastic Four. So I think that's interesting that they're promoting it as the DC's version of Fantastic Four.
Either way, I'm excited for this book.
Right. I am too.
One of the other things that I'm excited about was at the Vertigo panel, DC is teasing something coming with Vertigo next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that's like an anniversary. I don't think it is. Of the official imprint, it might be 25 years, but
no.
In a related story at another panel, that DC was asked about when they were going to be doing a Marvel Unlimited style sort of thing, and Jim Lee said, we're not ready to pull the trigger yet. Now, are these two unrelated things, or do you think, as a test, DC would roll out just the Vertigo side of things as a separate subscription service?
I don't know, but as you're asking me this, I just looked up Vertigo, mm-hmm. and it was founded in 1993, which was 24 years ago. So next year will be the 25th anniversary of Vertigo.
Right, and wasn't there that one book where they officially announced it? I forget what it was called.
What, at San Diego this year, you mean?
No. When they, because like you already had books that were Vertigo, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
but when they all got branded, it was like 1 month where everything that came out that month, this was the official branding of these books as Vertigo.
Right, when the Vertigo logo appeared in the left-hand corner of the top of the book. I don't remember when that was and what the first book was that had that, but I think that's it. And then I think on top of that, you were talking about all this, so they leaked a picture. No, well, leaked. They showed a picture and a beautiful picture of an artist's version of Death.
Yes.
And I think, I honestly think the 25th anniversary is coming up and they're doing, Neil's going, whether it's a one shot or whatever, there's going to be a Sandman-esque book. That's what the big thing is going to be. A Death one shot or something. I don't know.
It's definitely going to be something, and again, I'm just trying to put some pieces together. It's definitely something with the 25th anniversary, but just thinking, just why not do a subscription service, digital, put like all the Vertigo stuff online for $5 a month or whatever it is.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're going to do. I'm wondering now that I think about it more is if they're going to do like back in the day, they used to do those Vertigo jams and Winter's Edge books. I'm wondering if they're going to do like a jam book where it's going to be they're trying to get the band back together on some big titles or big name things.
Interesting.
And just get like, I'm not saying they are, but Neil Gaiman and this artist that did the Death piece, like do us a Death story. Get Grant Morrison and an artist to do a Doom Patrol story or just whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe get Alan Moore before he retires and do a Hellblazer or a Swamp Thing story. I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
I don't think
they've got at least another 3 to 6 years for that last miniseries to come out.
That is true. And then no more comics.
Right. So, you know, DC has a bunch of other things. We're talking about DC, of course. We're talking about Vertigo. This year, to coincide with already established, quote-unquote, days, they're adding some new days. Not the new day, but new days, as it were. The previously established Batman Day, which would be the third Saturday in September, is going to be co-opted by Harley Quinn for her 25th anniversary, and then to coincide with the upcoming Justice League movie, they are going to have a Justice League Day in November. Now, a couple things about that. I'm all about DC getting on the ball to try to promote their movies coming out. And we're going to get into a little bit of movie discussion, because we do have one last bit of news to cover that I saved for you for the end.
I wonder what it could be.
Now, we saw a lot of trailers and test footage and all sorts of things, but there was an official new Justice League trailer released at Comic-Con. And we don't really cover the movie side and the TV side of things, but it's San Diego, we gotta talk about the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about how the Flash movie is gonna be called Flashpoint, how there's gonna be a Wonder Woman sequel, you know, all this sort of stuff. But the Justice League trailer, the new one that was released, I did not like it. I did not like the first Justice League trailer. It was fine. But this one I thought was actively bad.
Okay.
And seeing this Justice League trailer, I am very afraid that this is going to be a bad movie.
I have a weird take on all of this, but the trailer didn't do anything for me other than cement one of the things that I think about it, and I forgive effects because they're always working on effects till the end, like, you know what I mean, like until the movie comes out. But there's a scene where Aquaman rides a parademon down through the sky, through a building and out the front door that looked absolutely atrocious. I went into full Joe Sposto mode.
Effects. You never want to go full Sposto.
No, you don't want to go full Sposto. Yeah, I was like, that looks god-awful, god-awful. But the whole thing with Snyder walking away from the with the tragedy of his family and Whedon taking over to shoot reshoots, which he was always going to do, they said, but now there's more. I just stand by the whole thing that Snyder's vision of what it is, and that movie was in the can already, and Whedon's reshooting, whether Warner Brothers themselves said – this movie, like, we got to go after Wonder Woman, we got to go in another direction and get Whedon on it and have him do his thing. Or it wasn't that, and they still asked Whedon to do more. It's just with that movie in the can with Snyder's vision, and now you throw extra Whedon on top. I don't know how those two movies can exist together. I think that's going to be so jarring. And as I always say, having that, you're not going to please the Snyder fans by adding Whedon, and you're not going to appease the Whedon fans by adding a little bit of Whedon to Snyder stuff. I just feel that you're trying to please too many masters, and in the end, you're pleasing none of them. So well, I don't have high hopes for this Justice League movie. It'll make bank, but go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, and exactly what you said is true. How they're trying to please everyone, and by doing so, they're going to end up pleasing no one. And that's my biggest problem with this new trailer, is the tone is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they cut to a different scene, the tone and the characters, the way they were interacting with each other, felt like they were all from different movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like what the Justice League movie could be. And again, I don't want to be one of these people that's like, it should be this and it should be that. I say, figure out what your movie is, figure out what the tone of your movie is, figure out the story you want to tell, and obviously there are unforeseen circumstances, like Todd mentioned with the Zack Snyder stuff and the Joss Whedon coming in and the reshoots that they said weren't reshoots, but they were reshoots and everything else like that. But the tone of this movie seems like they don't know what this movie is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it so many times on this show. Copy an A, get an A. Go watch the first Avengers movie and just make that with your Justice League characters.
Yep.
And it seems as though, like, with Parademons and the Chitauri, like, that's what they're trying to do. But from the trailers, the tone does not seem right. Specifically, the way now, in revisionist history, at least in the trailers, they're handling Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this new trailer, Bruce cuts the promo about how Superman was this beacon of light and hope and this thing of greatness that inspired so many people.
I was like, where was that in the movies?
Not in any of the movies that have been released in the last 10 years by DC.
Right, and I would want to say, like, the Snyder fans, like, who like the movie, I'm like, fine, show me where in the movie itself. The whole thing is we're scared of Superman. From the first movie, we're scared of him. We get the whole Pa thing that they're going to be scared of you. And then he shows up and Zod destroys Metropolis and almost destroys the world. So, like, all right, you're like, yeah, Superman saved us, but he's part of the people who try to kill us. And you show that in the second movie that people don't trust him because he's the alien and all this stuff. And there's even active movements to destroy him. And then on top of that, you know, like you show one brief footage of him dragging a ship and saving a child, and you're like, that's your hope moments. It's like, no, it's not there. It's not anywhere in the movies. So when you say that, when you say, oh, Batman's like, he's this beacon of hope, I'm like, Wonder Woman's the beacon of hope. If you said that, I'd be all over it, but not the Superman that you've portrayed for two movies now. I don't know. I'm the same way you are.
And then at the end of this trailer, they stooge off almost completely that Superman comes back at the end of Justice League. Well, if you didn't know that Superman was in the Justice League movie, they give it away at the end of the trailer.
What, by Alfred saying, you're welcome back or whatever?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I've heard people say, but that's not Superman, because how come Alfred is being so calm when a dead alien just walks through the door?
Because it's Alfred, and that's what it said in the script for him to act?
That's what I'm saying, too.
Right. So, again, I had a little bit of hope for the Justice League movie. This trailer sapped all hope out of me.
But we're still going to see it, right?
Still going to see it. Now, another question is, and this is something that has come up elsewhere, are we, and whether this is the royal we, pun intended, or you, or are there plans in the works to go see The Inhumans in IMAX?
There are none, but we could discuss.
Okay. We'll talk about that in 2 months when that happens.
Right. But right now, I don't know of anybody who's like, oh, get me to the Inhumans movie.
Really? People aren't clamoring and waiting for with bated breath for the Inhumans thing to happen?
I do love the Party City Medusa.
Oh, boy. I was informed recently, Todd, that we're supposed to put that aside and be absolutely 100% positive about the Inhumans movie.
Just the way we were about the Justice League movie a minute ago?
Yep.
Yep.
So, last bit of news coming out of San Diego that we're going to cover. If we covered all the news that came out of San Diego, this episode would be Gallifrey Birds in length.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't have it in me.
I do, because I get to go to sleep afterwards.
Todd?
Yes?
Were there any other movies that were teased to be talked about coming out from San Diego Comic-Con that have your interest specifically?
I was thinking, wasn't there a Last Airbender? No, there wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
Was there Back to the Future? No, there wasn't any Back to the Future. Was there something with a villain that I enjoyed? Was there something like that on our list of things to talk about?
Well, I know they did set up earlier this summer the Universal Monsters franchise with Tom Cruise against the Mummy, and I think Johnny Depp is going to be the Invisible Man. Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
I think they doctored something up at the San Diego. I swear to God, this is going to doom me until I figure it out. Was it Doctor Doom?
It was Doctor Doom, Todd.
Okay.
So it appears as though Noah Hawley, who I'm not familiar with, but does the FX shows Legion and Fargo, is going to be doing a Doctor Doom movie for Fox.
Right.
He didn't say a Fantastic Four movie. He didn't say an all-ages reboot of a Fantastic Four movie. Stories that we've seen come across the wire over the last several months and shuddered in fear over. No, he said it's going to be a Doctor Doom movie.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the books that Otto reads from the vampire's perspective, this film is going to be from Dr. Doom's perspective, apparently.
Right. I mean, obviously there's no news other than, oh, I'm making a Dr. Doom movie. Now, I've only seen two or three episodes of Legion, and I really enjoyed it early on. I didn't stop because, like, it was bad. It was just I was watching a lot of TV at the time, had to cut it down. And I haven't seen Fargo, but a lot of people that I, like, when you have people that, like, you listen to their opinion on TV shows, and, you know, they're 90% of the time, 85% of the time right, so you'll go watch what they watch. They're like, Todd, Fargo is really good. You'd really like it. So I need to get around and trying it. But with the track record Fox has had with the FF properties, I do not have a good feeling about this movie, even though it is I'm like, how could you screw up Doctor Doom? And then they screw up Doctor Doom. So I don't know, but I'm hoping after three god awful movies that they'll trip into something good. But I don't know. It's like, here, give me the movie. Come see me. Holly Jolly, whatever your name is, come see me, and we will make a Doctor Doom movie.
Are you going out to eat? Well, are you reaching out to him through the podcast?
Yes. If any of our listeners know Noel Jolly or whatever his name is, Holly or whatever, get to him, and obviously don't tell him about how I massacred his name, but get him that you know a true Doctor Doom aficionado, and he'll help you with the movie. And I'm sure he'll call me right up.
Excuse me.
Yes. Are you tweeting him now?
I'm going to tweet him right now. Hey, are you gonna Noah Hawley.
Is my phone going to go off?
Need a Doctor Doom expert who will work for free on your upcoming project? ? Give Todd a ringy dingy. Now, today is July 26th, almost for real. I am going to tweet him every day until he responds.
Or you're blocked.
Or I am blocked. Or we're both blocked.
Oh, hey, an icon just showed up on my phone from my Twitter.
There you go.
Hey, Noah, need a Dr. Doom expert who will work for free on your upcoming project.
Let's get your foot in the door.
Yep. Gervy, Roker, Joker, a ringy dingy.
Gervy? Did I misspell something?
G-I-R-V-E. That's not a good start, Sposto.
Well, look, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. It's late. Are you bothering me? We're going to delete this tweet and fix it.
Oh, that's wishy-washy.
Very rarely do I delete tweets.
Oh, should I screen cap it?
It's too late now. There we go.
Hear this sound? Oh, no, wait. I ruined it. I screen capped it, Joe.
All right, so I fixed it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he'll answer?
Well, we're going to find out how many it takes.
All right.
Even if he just favorites it or likes it or retweets it or something, that's enough.
Then we'll go viral.
Now, I will say this. His Twitter account has mostly been inactive for the last 2 months.
Well, but now
this
that
could
he's
be
got...
the thing that wakes it back up.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? What if we get an exclusive for the Doctor Doom? We could walk the Doctor Doom red carpet, the green carpet of Latveria.
Right. They would have to remake Man's Chinese Theater into whatever the movie theater in Latveria is called.
Oh, Doomstad Theater.
Nothing, because there are no movie theaters in Latveria. Doom does not allow movies there.
He does, but they're all movies about Doom.
Oh, okay.
They're like, young Doom got high grades in school. There's like Dr. Little Kid with knee socks and knee pants, and he's got like a little mask on.
It's all just propaganda?
Oh, yes, it's Latvian propaganda movies.
So, I think that closes out the news we're going to cover, yes?
Yes.
All right, so we just passed San Diego. There is a bunch of conventions happening this weekend. The Manchester Comic Cons return, at least the links that I've seen return for them. It looks like they have mostly just a bunch of anime people there, either people involved directly with anime or people who do the voices with anime. It's a lot of anime stuff. And then there are two conventions in Florida this weekend, the Florida SuperCon in Fort Lauderdale and the Tampa Bay Comic Con. If you are in the Sunshine State of Florida, please check one of those two out. But the biggie, at least for me, for media types, is Fandom Fest in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, Todd, unfortunately, there's been some cancellations on this, and sadly, their site is not as up-to-date as I would like it to be. Burt Ward is one of the guests there, and one has to think there might have been someone else there with him as well, initially booked.
Mm-hmm.
However, Sonny Chiba is going to be there.
Sonny Chiba?
Yes. Sonny Chiba, who's been in a bunch of martial arts films. Maybe you would most know him from... Oh, boy, what's the... trying to think what the one he's most... notable for. I know he was in Battle Royale, which is where I know him from when he became a little bit of an older man, but he was a big 70s and 80s action star, Shogun Shadow, Shadow Warrior, a lot of stuff with Shogun or Shadow or Samurai in the title.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a big Hong Kong movie star. But on the wrestling side of things, Todd, Sting is going to be there.
Oh, the bass player for the Police?
Mm-hmm, right. Gordon, not Shumway. What's his, what's Sting's shoot name?
Gordon Shumway, I think it is.
Right, Gordon Shumway. And a man who is not a controversial character in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
The world of professional wrestling does not compare wrestling matches to the Holocaust.
Oh, boy.
A man Todd knows is Jim Clarinet.
Yes.
I think this convention is literally doors away from his house. So even though they're not advertising him being there on the website, and I can understand why they're not,
Right.
Based on some of his more recent comments, having orders of protection filed against him and whatnot, Jim Cornette does plug this convention regularly on his bi-weekly podcast, so I would be remiss to mention, if you're going to Fandom Fest this weekend, see if Jim has any of his burger towels and pick one up for me.
I'm not even going to ask.
There's a lot going on in that, and if you want to ask, we can talk about it later.
All right.
One thing Todd doesn't need to ask about is the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, where you can listen to anytime one of these shows go up, it goes up on the site as well. And by these shows, I mean this show that you're listening to, Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, and other shows that come out on a slightly less regular basis, including Aim Down Sights Podcast, Talkin' Gimmicks, Paladins of Voltron, which have been promised to me are coming back in the near future, but most importantly, Todd, Prodigal Sons returned this past week. And there was one person who asked, and it was me, and I don't care. They were off for 3 months, and it was a great episode. I'm glad to have the boys back.
Me too. I just want to enjoy you enjoying the podcast. That's all.
When I come to the shop later today, I will bring it in, and I'll take one of my earbuds out, and we could share the earbud and listen to the podcast together that way.
Like an old-timey sharing of the milkshake, but it's right. Modern day.
You ever see that, like, in a commercial where it'll be, like, the people who have, like, the two earbuds, like, one will be in each person's ear, and they're, like, listen to this cool song that I heard.
That's right. Listen to this great beat with funky lyrics.
Right. Freedom rock? No.
Well, turn it up.
All right. So moving along to digital sales and freebies, there's a bunch of stuff on sale. Valiant, who haven't had a sale in quite some time, is having a sale on their Faith book and all of their Faith-related stuff, both the miniseries and the ongoing series, and then pretty much everything that it's kind of touched, from things like Harbinger to Ivar Time Walker, which I forgot came back, with all of this stuff, and the Comixology Valiant High little digital exclusive-y thing that's included in this sale, as is Marvel having a sale on the Dark Tower books for some reason I'm not really sure of.
I think there might be a movie.
Mm-hmm. I saw a trailer for this movie for the first time, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that Matthew McConaughey was the villain in this movie.
How could that charismatic guy be the villain in any movie?
And then when I saw that Matthew McConaughey was the villain in the movie, I was like, oh, they're serious. This isn't a comedy.
This isn't just another Dark Tower movie, like teen comedy.
Right. Inspired casting, good on ya. Glad McConaughey's stretching his legs there a little bit, but good luck.
You know,
Valerian stuff is still on sale. I guess that movie did okay at the box office this past weekend. I didn't look too closely.
Mm-hmm.
Through Marvel's Icon imprint, Brian Michael Bendis' Powers stuff is on sale. I recommend, let's say, the first 30 issues are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest, buyer beware. Things kind of get a little wonky there. I think that ends up being maybe like the first 6 trades, if that's what you're looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
First trade's really good. The Who Killed Retro Girl. I wonder if it still holds up today, but whether it does or does not, certainly that's going to be up to you to figure out, not me.
I wouldn't know. Never read any of it, so.
And lastly, with the sales, Image is having a sale on everything. It's buy one, get one, free, and you have to put in a code with it. That's not one of those ones where it's just automatically taken off. So if you want to catch up on some trades of stuff, if you want to get caught up on single issues of stuff, whatever it is that you're looking to do, you know, go do it. And also be wary as well when you're looking to, if you're going to buy some stuff through the Image sale. Not that I would want you not to buy through Image if you have the Comixology Unlimited stuff, a lot of the earlier Image, bigger stuff is available there for free. So, you know, be careful in buying something that you may already own in your collection. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, essentially get... And, like, stuff is on sale as well. Like, all the Saga trades are half off. And they're also buy one, get one. Just as an example. Just pulling a random one out of nowhere. East of West. Invincible. Deadly Class. Witchblade. Criminal. Oh, boy. Well, they're not half off. But all the Criminal trades are $9 a pop. And they're buy one, get one free. What are you doing? What are you doing with your life?
If you get those are some of my favorite crime comic stuff ever.
Right. Absolutely. They have the Todd Nod. Remember when the Todd Nod was a thing?
Should we bring the Todd Nod back?
I would have to ask Todd if he wants to bring the Todd Nod back. I don't think that's my decision.
Well, you know what? Add it to the things we'll discuss at our 2014 steak and steak dinner.
I saw you tweeting about steak the other day. It made me worried.
Well, it was Scrubs. They were... All the actors were at a steakhouse, and they were talking. There's a. Did you ever watch Scrubs?
No.
There's a famous scene where they're talking about that they go to steak night. They go to steak night every once in a while, and they have a steak night song that they do. And I just posted up the lyrics because the actors were doing selfies in the steakhouse. It's a great moment. Don't worry about it.
Gotcha. So, digital freebies, of course, nothing really new added to the list. All that's included here in the show notes, of course, except for one book that we are going to discuss in what we read this past week, and that would be Kentucky Fried Chicken Across the Universe, written by Tony Bedard, with art by friend of the show, artist of the show, Tom Derenick.
Yes.
Now, the previous two Kentucky Fried Chicken DC books are also available digitally for free, or if you were one of the lucky people to go to San Diego and get a print copy of this, bully for you, I say.
Yes. Or if you know somebody,
right,
you can get your dirty little hands on them, I say do that. You know?
Right. So this will be the first book that we'll be talking about because I think we both read it, correct?
Yep. This is the third in an installment of a story with Colonel Sanders, and this time he teams up with Hal Jordan, a.k.a. Green Lantern, to send Chicken Zinger sandwiches into space, which I think they actually did send a Chicken Zinger sandwich into the stratosphere. I'm not sure, because Tom was telling me that they, I don't know if they sent it in a balloon or what, but he had the story somewhere. So this is a funny take on that to me. And through sending the Chicken Zingers into space, they get hijacked by the mystery villain of this story. And Colonel Sanders gets a Green Lantern ring, question mark? Something like a Green Lantern ring. And he goes out with Hal Jordan to find and retrieve his Chicken Zinger sandwiches that he wants to bring to all the aliens in space. This is another fun blast. This is really good. I think the second one was my favorite, but this one is still really good. And the fight's fun, and how they get out of it is ridiculous, but fun. And once again, the letters page is an absolute blast, with letters written by people like Green Lantern and someone by the name of T. Sinestro. I wonder who that could be.
Terry Sinestro.
Yes.
So yes, I did find the news story from about a month or so ago. We're part of the ad campaign for the spicy crispy chicken sandwich. KFC launched it into the stratosphere in a high altitude balloon, ran at an altitude of 50 to 80,000 feet for 4 days. And there's videos of the ad campaign. There's videos of the launch. If you just search Zinger into space,
there's something I didn't think I'd be Googling.
Right. Or Binging, whatever your preferred method of correctly searching things online is. I did like this. It was fun. I did feel, though, this was probably the weakest of the three.
This one seemed very like an advertisement instead of a story.
Okay.
I don't know if that, I mean, that sounds pretty bad, but like, I like them. I don't know. It just seemed like, where the chicken zinger seemed like a part of the story when it should have been like a main character, when it should have been a C character. I don't know. I still enjoyed it. And the villain, like I said, who, you know, demanded these chicken zingers. And anytime Colonel Sanders makes a power ring thing of a big drumstick, I'm all for it.
Again, there was good stuff here, but there was something that was missing, I think, that the other two books had. Like, you know, you had the multiple colonels, or you had the Flash and Green Lantern, where you have the whole Green Lantern Corps, but it seems as though the Green Lantern Corps really didn't do anything.
Right, and that's why Guy yells up a storm in this letter column.
Oh, there. Well, see, there you go.
So, yes. But I look forward to more. I want more. I think the one thing that I would have liked more of is the KFC ads, fake ads in it. We only get one for the Zinger meteorite for only $20,000, which I would buy if I had a spare $20,000. But it has a $2 off mail-in rebate.
I did notice that mail-in rebate, and it was tough to redeem digitally.
Oh, was it? We yes. should try and send in. We should take all the money we get from the Amazon click-through and send it to this and try to get the meteorite.
I'll scrape that money together tomorrow.
All right. See if you can do that.
All right. So the other two books that we read is another DC book. Batman number 27. We were talking about Tom King before. This is the continuation in Batman number 27 of the War of Jokes and Riddles. This one, the war, like the Joker's in it, the Riddler's in it. But it kind of sort of takes a back seat to the DC rebirth of a long-known character in the DC Batman, etc. verse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think okay, do we spoil this?
Well, first of all, I want to throw something out there that this isn't part of the... It is part of the War of Jokes and Riddles, but did you read the credits page?
Yes.
That it's an interlude?
Right. Like I said, that's the back, like the War of Jokes and Riddle is like the background of this,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the main focus of what this story is.
Right. The main focus is how much we spoil it. It's the origin I didn't know I needed of Kite Man. What?
Again. And then I forgot that Kite Man's, it's not like it's a retcon, but from whenever Kite Man was instituted in DC Comics in the late 60s, early 70s, his alter ego identity's name is Charlie Brown.
Which is fantastic. I hope they don't find a kite-eating tree.
Oh my goodness. That's where Swamp Thing comes in. You get your Swamp Thing Kite Man book.
I would read... Oh my goodness. Gotta get Tom to draw that for me now.
But this was a really good book, and I hope after the Mr. Miracle maxi series, and whenever Tom King decides to wrap his time up on Batman, he does a Kite Man ongoing.
Right.
It is a story like this that makes Kite Man not a joke anymore.
He's still a little bit of a joke, it's okay. Just his story isn't a joke.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Because a lot could be said that maybe there was a time where there may have been certain villains or certain characters or, you know, whatever it is that were not taken as seriously as they are in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always some comic book story or some sort of appearance on a TV show or some sort of something that kind of catapulted that character into the zeitgeist as not your dad's version of X or so-and-so is not a joke anymore. I absolutely feel that this could be that thing for Kite Man.
Right. And by the credits page, it says The Ballad of Kite Man, Part 1, which gives me high hopes that there will be a Kite Man Part 2. So I don't know if it continues after this issue or he's going to pepper it throughout here or his run. We're going to get Kite Man. Like I said, it's the Kite Man origin I didn't know I needed, but I did, and I want more. And I do like the idea of how he told this story, because for a Kite Man story, Joe, this is a very intelligent story and how it's, I had to like, I don't mean figure out in a bad way what was going on. It's just like, okay, the story takes place in the past. It's during the War of Jokes and Riddles. And I'm starting to see how time jumps and stuff like this. Cause it's never like, just like, oh, now, or like a word that says, you know, 2 weeks later. It's like, oh, okay, the passage, there's been a passage of time because of this or that. And this happened. So it's a very intelligent story for a Kite Man story, which blew my mind.
I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time that Kite Man has appeared in Tom King's Batman. And mm-hmm. I certainly have a feeling it will not be the last.
I don't either. I think... In all said and done, and you're gonna think I'm joking, but of his run, I think what he will be remembered for is Kite Man. Not the marriage of Catwoman and Batman and all that other stuff. It will be whatever he has planned in the long game for Kite Man.
And I'm okay with that.
Me too.
So, the last book that we read from this past week was Archie number 22. Mm-hmm. Written by Mark Waid with art by Pete Woods.
Yes.
So this is the continuation of the Drag Race story, part 3, that's been going on for a couple months now. We were left last issue with the cliffhanger that it was Betty that was in the hospital from the car crash. We don't know exactly what happened from there. The first issue of the story arc led us to believe that it possibly could have been Archie or Reggie. Obviously, it ends up being Betty, and the last issue ended with her flatlining. This issue is how Betty has touched the lives of everyone in Riverdale.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, because I tweeted about this book, and that's why Joe demanded we put this on the thing, and I was fine with it, because I was going to say that's what we're going to talk about. But we see... Betty's parents, which is absolutely a great, you know, take on the story and how they are when she was baby and how her father's klutziness may have, you know, led to her choices in men and to Veronica meeting her for the first time, her interaction, an early interaction with Principal Weatherby and how it shows how nice, Betty is. But Joe, and if I go mute, it's because I'm getting all verklempt. The Archie stuff with young Betty and then the collage of Betty and Archie pictures, just, it broke me down. Like, this book made me just, like, lose my stuff. I was like, oh, my God, how emotional I got over Archie and Betty's relationship. Just blew my mind. I had to take a moment, and then, you know, that all that happens. And then we're led to a cliffhanger at the end that I don't want to mention, but is going to be big if they stick with it. And I was just like, this is an amazing issue. And Pete Woods, if I can't have Fiona Staples, which I understand because she went back to Saga and she did, you know, a little bit on this. Keep Pete Woods forever. Pete Woods is crushed it on this book. Absolutely crushed it. I love this issue.
Archie was one of the books that I kind of sort of fell a little bit behind on. Mm-hmm. Luckily, it is a good, easy, quick read that, as Todd mentioned, still packs a huge emotional punch. And it leads you one way, it pulls you back the other, and then, as Todd mentioned, ends on such a cliffhanger that I can't wait for this next issue to come out, whether it's the resolution of the storyline. I think this is what, 22? I think they might be going to 25 and they might be taking some time off. Either way, I can't wait to see what happens next with this book. And if you can't get that out of a comic book, then you're doing things wrong.
Right. And I just want to say, little Betty urging on Archie, saying, try, come on, I'll catch you if you fall. Like every time, and just that look of her every time, and he has the little hearts over his head. I get all worked up every time. That's Mark Waid, when I see you again, I'm going to yell right at you for making Null over an Archie comic. And then I'm going to thank you.
So that covers what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, however it is that you get your books. This is the short version.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
I do.
So the two things that Todd and I are doing with our books in the calendar year 2017 is, one, attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, as well as keeping a tally of all the books that we've purchased in the calendar year, broken out by publisher. I'm in the lead, blah, blah, blah. Next year we'll do a dollar amount and really want to hang ourselves.
Oh, boy. Yep.
So, Todd, went first, so you guess first.
Yes, I'm looking over your list. And is the book you're looking forward to most Saga 45?
It is Saga 45. And I'll just take a stab in the dark. Is that also the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week as well?
No, it is not.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you honestly not know what book I'm looking forward to most?
Looking at your list again. That's on me. I know what it is. I'll take the hit for not paying attention.
What is it, Joe?
It would be Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 28.
Yes, it is. And why is it that book?
That is a Jonah Hex issue.
Yes, it is. And I will always put Jonah Hex at the top of the list, whether it's the kitty animated version or the murdering Jimmy Palmiotti version. I just Jonah Hex anytime, because I don't get him as much as I used to. I'll take it any way I can.
Right. Oh, boy. I'll take the hit on that one.
I'm really shocked. I thought you were going to be all over that one, Joe.
It's almost as though I'm impaired, Todd.
Oh, as long as you're not in oranges.
No. Ugh. So bad. All right. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that's over there as well, whether it be past editions of this show, past editions of After Dark. A ginormous Gallifrey burst is coming up this week, and I expect at least several people to be putting their words in their hat and eating their hat.
Words?
No, he doesn't listen to podcasts, or if he does, he does it at double speed. So, again, I don't think you'll really get the nuances of what we'll be discussing. Past editions of the Pull Post, past editions of Todd and Joe Have Issues, everything that we've ever done exists on the internet, and all of that exists on one place of the internet, and that's longboxheroes.com. While you're over there, be sure to check out our little thing for the store that we have there. There was a lot of discussion about people buying shirts this week.
Oh, was there?
No one actually bought one, but there was a lot of discussion about it.
I like when people discuss, but you know what I like better?
Them actually buying their shirts?
You gotta buy. You gotta jam their head into the box, Joe, and say, you gotta buy. Times are tough.
Well, I will say this. We did have some activity at our Amazon click-through, of course. You cannot get our shirts or the stickers through there, but you certainly can get a multitude of other things. Someone purchased a hard drive, a Toshiba internal hard drive, with a bunch of letters and numbers and coding. It's a 3-terabyte hard drive, I'll say that.
Oh, that's a lot of terabytes.
It certainly is. Someone also purchased King of the Hill Season 11 on DVD.
Ooh, I wonder if they bought the first 10.
Maybe they already own them. They just realized that the 11th finally got released on DVD.
Mm.
Someone also purchased the digital version of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I haven't seen the two, but I did enjoy that reboot one. I just haven't gotten a chance to watch the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Highly unlikely that I will. I think Rise of the Planet of the Apes was one of the last movies that April and I saw in the theaters before Asa was born.
Did Asa see it too, at least hear it?
He might have been aware that it was going on, yes.
Ah.
And someone also purchased an electric air fryer, which apparently are becoming all the rage in 2017.
I want one.
Well, have someone else purchase it for you through our Amazon click-through, and that's how we double dip.
Maybe I'll put it on Amazon wish list.
Oh, there you go.
which, you know, I'll publish so all the fans could buy me many, many expensive things.
Right. So what I'm going to ask, so first of all, thank you everyone who purchased anything through the Amazon click-through this past week. If you are the one who purchased the air fryer and you also own one of our shirts or stickers, I'd ask you to put a picture of you deep frying your shirt.
Oh my goodness.
From that episode of The Simpsons where Bart went to the carnival and he deep fried his, and Homer deep fried his shirt and ate it.
Yep.
That's all. We had some art attacks this week, did we not, Todd?
Yes, we did. We had a Jonah Hex sketch by Tom Mandrake from Stiff Peg Pete. He got for supporting Tom Mandrake's Cross, I guess it is, on Kickstarter. So I thought that, and anytime you get a Jonah Hex piece, I'm 100% fine with that. So looks beautiful. And I even said to him that I'm jealous because I always wanted a Tom Mandrake sketch of my own. He's on my dream list. And if I had known that I could have got a sketch for backing his Kickstarter, I may have backed his Kickstarter at a higher incentive level.
Next time.
Next time.
Next time. So, of course, that's through Todd's Art Attack altogether as one word on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter at Longbox Heroes. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Sposto. Follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. And his other Twitter account, Hexecutions, which I do not think will be updated with the upcoming Scooby-Doo appearance of Jonah Hex. But you never know.
I still have to do the Yosemite Sam one, and then a few weeks later I'll do it, because I don't want to spoil it. Maybe there is a murder in the Scooby-Doo one, and I figure let it you know, get out there so people can read it and form their own opinion.
Sure.
before I ruin it, you know?
Right. And all we got left is Todd and Joe have issues, yes?
Yes, we do.
All right, so again, a bit out of our wheelhouse, of course. This was Uncanny X-Men number 201, written by Chris Claremont, with art by Rick Leonardi. This is, you know, in the throes of the fabled Chris Claremont era of X-Men. You know, in the mid or early to mid 80s, there are many other people, many other podcasts, many other everything that have covered these specific comics and these specific everythings much more in depth than we can. I am nowhere near as knowledgeable on the X-Men as it is to any other corner of the Marvel Universe.
Say that again? I got confused.
I am
you said.
Nowhere near as knowledgeable about the X-Men.
Okay.
As I am about any other corner of the Marvel Universe.
I guess I would be the same way. And an interesting side note before we get into the talking about the book, when I did a little write-up on the Todd and Joe Have Issues, and you were like, the book was a reprint book, and it was almost canceled, and this and that, and then the Claremont run. I do think that it was you besmirched poor John Byrne by not mentioning him, even though the Claremont run goes on after John Byrne leaves. I do believe if it wasn't for Claremont and Byrne, X-Men would have been canceled. That's all I'm saying. I think Byrne was a bigger piece, and then Claremont, to a lesser extent, from what I hear, because I didn't read everything, goes on, and it loses a little bit of its luster after Byrne leaves. But it's still good, apparently. If that makes any sense.
Well, I think the reason I didn't include Byrne was because he did not do this issue.
Right. I was just talking about when you said the book was almost canceled and then Claremont saved it. And I'm like, Claremont, Byrne saved it. I don't know why that just – do you know what I mean? Like just that little bit of it. But, you know, I'll let it slide this time.
You want to do the write-ups?
No.
Okay.
Did I offend?
No.
Okay.
And again, I say this with love. Anytime that you read something on the write-ups and you're like, I don't agree with that.
Right.
I'm going to give Joe a piece of my mind about this. And then think to yourself,
do I want to do the write-ups?
Do I want to do these?
And I gave you my piece of my mind when you screwed up the Justice League one.
Right. That one, listen, that one's you. I'll let you have that.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I know I'm going to keep my mouth shut in the future on this.
All right. But anyway. So, I, for some reason, was expecting this to be more heady than, like, a lot more wordy and verbose. And, you know, this seemed a little bit more straightforward than what I was led to believe that this era of the X-Men was about.
Mm-hmm.
You have your little relationship-y stuff going on. They just came back from an adventure. They think Professor X is gone. They think he might be dead, whatever it is. But, of course, he's off gallivanting with Liliandra. How do you pronounce that?
Your guess is as good as mine.
All right, but... and the Star Jammers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, you have your little interplay. Everybody gets, like, a little character moment, whether it be as much as two or three bird balloons. Like, there's very little Wolverine in this.
Right, but...
The little bit of Wolverine that's in here goes a long way.
Oh, my goodness. He is fantastic. Wolverine has the Todd perspective on children, so I'm 100% fine with Wolverine's part in this book.
Right, but of course, the main thing is that the main crux of this is Madeline Pryor, who we don't know at the time, at this point in the story, is evil.
And
gave birth to, what was that?
And is a clone of...
Jean Grey.
Jean Grey or something, but I don't know if we know that at this point, but...
We as the reader do not know that at this point.
Okay.
But this is the beginning of us knowing.
Mm-hmm.
She gives birth to a child. Scott is the only one who does not call to congratulate her,
mm-hmm.
even though it's his kid. And Scott, of course, is kind of torn because he has his own daddy issues with his own father, who he was led to believe was his father, the fact that he doesn't currently know that Corsair of the Starjammers is his father, and Professor X, who was his father figure, is no longer around. And he wants to take over the X-Men, of course, now that Xavier is gone and Magneto is in charge of the New Mutants side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of... That's the main crux of this. And then, of course, there's an out-of-nowhere battle between Storm and Cyclops to see who the leader of the X-Men is going to be. Storm does not have her powers, but she does... she's a better fighter in this instance than Cyclops. She beats Cyclops, and this is when Cyclops gets written out of the book for a little bit.
Right, and for some weird reason, we said Storm doesn't have powers, and for some reason she has cat's eyes through the whole issue.
Mm.
That's neither here nor there. And then there's a small epilogue with Rachel, the future version of Scott, and I don't know if it was Madeline Pryor or Jean Grey's kid from the future, does something with her parents, which that part I completely didn't understand with her grandparents. Completely just threw me off my game. But I'm going to just stay with the first story. I thought it was really good, other than Scott really coming off as a jerk on this. Like, that's your kid, and you can't call to see. Everybody else called to see if Madeline was all right. He doesn't, and then he's not sure he can give up the X-Men for his own child. And like you said, he has dad things going on. You seem like it would be a no-brainer for him to take over. I don't know. I just thought that was weird. Otherwise, I really enjoyed the story and the way they found a way to have a powerless Storm beat Cyclops, even though he has the visor thing. He's like, I'm only going to use my settings on low and all that. I thought that was really good. But in the end, I kind of am different than you. Then I thought it was a little too wordy. It was a bit what I've heard is like Chris Claremont style, where it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm outside and I'm thinking to myself that I'm going to take off my visor. But when I take off my visor, I have to put on my ruby quartz glasses without opening my eyes, or I will destroy everything that I, and I'm like, oh my God, I get it. I'm like, and there's no reason Scott would think of this like the way he does while he's changing his visor. It's just the old school way of writing a comic where I have to describe somehow every little thing I do. It wasn't as much as I thought it was going to be, but it was still there. And I was like, ooh, that does stand out, and kind of, I'm like, oh, I never liked that, and I felt that was on the X books at that time, especially a lot. And as time went on later, you'd try it and you'd be like, yep, it's still very descriptive in everything that they do. But that's my take on the book.
Right. And for me, because this was a book from the 80s, I was already in the mindset that we're going to get a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So again, I didn't kind of say, well, this is how the X-Men books are. This is like, oh, this is how comic books were back then.
Right. But I think at times Chris could overdo it more than other people a little bit.
I get
especially
you.
Right. So
I enjoyed this. It made me want to read more X-Men, but I don't think this is the starting point for this era. I think this is like the beginning of what would be like chapter 2 or 3 of whatever this large overarching story would be.
Right. I do feel that's one thing that I do feel is that I popped in the middle of something larger. It didn't feel like accessible.
Right.
Like I felt that X-Men really became later, but I do feel that maybe this was the beginning of you needed a PhD in X-Men to understand the book. Like that was the train tracks we were going down at this time.
Right. Still a good issue, a good peek into what the X-Men were at that time, but a good solo issue, self-contained, but not the best jumping in point for what the X-Men were doing.
Right.
All right. So we got one last bit of business, and that's what the book next week is going to be. Todd?
Yes, next week's book is Peter David's Hulk number 420. Which I believe, if I've done my homework, is the AIDS issue.
Oh,
the famous
okay.
AIDS issue. I don't know if you read that back in the day, but I remember this book very, very well.
Again, yes, a one-issue thing, kind of part of a larger story arc, of course. One of the Hulk sidekicks is fighting a battle with AIDS.
Right, and I do believe there was a backup story with Betty at a suicide hotline, too, which makes this a very heady issue.
Right.
But I could be wrong on that. But
yes, so I was reading Hulk at this time. I think there was it some sort of like big push, chromium covers, something around this time where they merged all the Hulks together?
Yes, this is what before the Ultimate Universe
right.
was called the Ultimate Hulk,
mm.
where I know like not the ultimate version of the Hulk from the Ultimate Universe, but it was the Ultimate Hulk. Peter had given him Banner's intelligence, but gave him the Green Hulk's strength, which was the strongest, but gave him the Gray Hulk's cunning. Like it was everything, the best of everything that was the Hulk. From each different one was merged to the ultimate tank top Hulk.
Right. So it was maybe about, because I think it was about 2 or 3 years prior to this where that happened. And I think that's mm-hmm. right around the time when I started reading this book.
Right. I think I was reading it slightly before it, but I'm not 100% sure.
Because I think it tied in with something that was going on in Spider-Man at the time.
That I don't remember.
Right. Like, I think Hulk appeared in, like, some sort of big Sinister Six fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm like, oh, I really like the Hulk here. Let me go check that out.
Oh, I was wondering if it was one of those continued in Hulk 328 or whatever.
No. I mean? It was just, like, the Hulk showed up. They addressed the, we're getting too deep into this. But the infamous, I guess, no, was this the Spider-Man story? Is where Doc Ock beats the Hulk.
Okay.
And then in one of the issues of Incredible Hulk, written by Peter David, who was upset that that happened to the Hulk in a book that he wasn't writing, had the Hulk go beat the crap out of Dr. Octopus to make up for the way that he was portrayed in the other book.
Ah, I wonder who won the rubber match.
I don't think they've ever crossed paths again.
You know what we need? We need Hulk versus Superior Spider-Man. Oh.
That's well, he's not around anymore, but, well, no, he is. He's the superior octopus now, and I don't know if, well, the Hulk's isn't not, well, isn't the Hulk back by now? I don't know.
I don't know. Aren't they all Nazis now? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something going on.
Right, but, anyway.
Anyway, I think that wraps up the show here for this evening. Did I miss anything?
Nope, I think we're all good.
All right, so, for Todd, this is Joe, closing out episode 365 of Longbox Heroes. And we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
I just said 365. It's actually 356. This is the night I'm having. The day I'm having. Boop.